I'd like to do a quick recap of the very last thing we looked at last session, and that is the named persons in David's administration. This comes hot on the heels after David had secured the city of Jerusalem as the capital city of a united Israel, and after David's military push into the full boundaries of the promised land had taken place. So David is now king from way down in the south part of the Negev, all the way up to the bend in the Euphrates River, from the Mediterranean coast, all the way to the Jordan River, and in some places beyond the Jordan River to the east into some of Israel's related people groups. And so David is the first king and only one of two kings to have ruled over the entirety of the Promised Land. The next king that will do that, of course, is Yehoshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah himself. So this is the record of his administration officials. We're in 2 Samuel 8, 15 through 18, and the parallel is from 1 Chronicles 18, 14 through 17. So David reigned over all Israel. He administered justice and equity to all his people. So he's living according to the judicial standards in God's word. Remember that as a king, according to the directives written down by Moses at God's directive, God's instruction, when David became king, he would have had to done a handwritten copy with the priest watching him do it to make sure he didn't make any errors, didn't leave anything out, add anything in. He had to make a handwritten copy of at least the book of Deuteronomy. But I suspect it may have included all of Moses' written documents. That is, the first five books of what we call the Old Testament. Regardless, he has to keep that handwritten copy with him for his entire reign, and he has to read from it and refer to it as he rules to make sure that he does things in accordance with the true king of Israel's intention, because God is really the king of Israel. And so here is a list of David's human helpers. Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was over the army. Zeruiah is David's older sister. That makes Joab his nephew, probably very close to the same age as himself. That seems to be the indication. But Joab got this position because David threw out there, when he was getting ready to take Jerusalem, the one who gets through the water tunnel and takes the city of Jerusalem intact will become the head of my army. Well, his nephew, even though his nephew was a big problem, having been involved in the assassination of Abner, David has to keep his word. And so he gives the job to Joab. Continues, Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder. Now we'll see recorder and secretary used here, not very far apart, and it's the same word, I believe, in Hebrew. It's the idea of a person who keeps a record, who writes things down. So I think it's possible that the first person mentioned here is the one who keeps records of military items. The second one is probably the guy that takes care of civilian and maybe religious items, non-military things. That's just a guess. Verse 17 says, Zadok, the son of Ahitub, and Ahimelech, the son of Abiathar, were priests. Now, Ahimelech is the guy that's been traveling around with David ever since his father and all his fellow priests were murdered by Doeg at the command of King Saul. Zadok is or has been brought on board as a partner priest with Ahimelech. And why are there two priests? It may be just simply because there are two worship sites. There is the tabernacle at the city of Gibeon, a few miles to the northwest of Jerusalem. And then there is the sacred tent under which the Ark of God's Covenant, his throne, is situated at Jerusalem, apparently in the courtyard of David's palace. So you've got two worship sites that have daily sacrifices and ceremonies going on at the exact same time. And so I suspect that these two priests kind of work in sync, in tandem together. That's just my best guess for you as to why we have these two priests at the same time. Sariah, as I said, was secretary, so he's keeping a written record. And then the one that I just mentioned right before I ran out of time last time, but I wanted to expand on. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Kerethites and the Pelethites. Now, these are two paramilitary groups. So they're not technically military. They are functioning separate from them. Kerethite is taken from the word in Hebrew that means to cut. And the word is used in reference to making a covenant. You cut a covenant. And when you cut a covenant, you're making an arrangement. You're making a deal. You're making a bargain. So I believe that this is a reference to the sworn bodyguards of David. They are, for all practical purposes, the Secret Service detail. They are the guys that are going to be with David wherever he goes. And so they have taken an oath in order to fulfill that responsibility. And that's why they're called the Kerethites, the covenant cutters. The Pelethites, that word is taken from a word that means to run. And so this is the courier corps. These are the runners, the messengers that go from place to place to keep David up to speed with what's going on elsewhere in his kingdom. So they are the communication, high-speed communication people. And so that's why they are under one commander, because both these groups are there for the benefit of the throne. They are there for the benefit of King David. And so one guy is overseeing both these groups. We'll see them mentioned in other places and be able to observe how they're functioning. Now, the last line, which is one of the reasons I wanted to come back here, is another one of those places. It is good for us to have a parallel source, which is 1 Chronicles 18, verse 17 in this case. Because the text that we have of 2 Samuel 18, 17, or 18, 18 says that David's sons were priests. Well, right off the bat, you know that's not possible, because David's family is from the tribe of Judah. Priests come from the tribe of Levi, and specifically from the family of Aaron. So it's impossible for David's sons to act as priests. In the parallel passage of 1 Chronicles 18, 17, it says, David's sons were chief officials in the service of the king. So somewhere in the copying of texts, 2 Samuel ended up substituting the word priest where it was supposed to be the word for official. And we know that happens in our hand copying of things. We never make a claim that the copies of God's word are inspired. It was the original documents that were inspired, and then the people were very focused and attentive to passing those copies down as accurately as possible. And they were typically very good at it, but we do know that things do creep in. And so we have good records, thanks to these parallels, that help us to catch those places where that happened. And they are a very, very, very small part of the overall text. And none of them really have anything to do with doctrine. And so David's sons, who, when he took Jerusalem, would have all been very young kids, very young boys and girls. We're talking about less than 6 years old, because David took the city of Jerusalem in the eighth year of his reign, after 7.5 years of being a king at Hebron. And his first kids were born at Hebron as he was king. So once he gets past becoming king at Jerusalem, he's continuing to have kids, and his younger kids are growing up. And so some of them hit their teen years within, 10 years, less than 10 years of David being at Jerusalem. And once they probably hit 13 or 14, David starts giving them responsibilities in the kingdom to help them prepare to become leaders of their own power later in life. I mean, David's oldest son is assumed to be the next king. And so he's in training for that, and so are his brothers to help in that process. All right, so that's what's going on in those first 7 or so 8 years after David becomes king at Jerusalem. At this point, I want to bring in a whole bunch of Psalms. We got kind of a lull in David's kingdom right now. He's been very active with the military and taken over all of the parts of the Promised Land in a very short period of time. And so I think he probably just settles in. And so we'll just kind of let him cook as the king for a while and see some of the writings, some of the songs that he has produced up to this point that the Jewish people are now taking note of. We're going to start first with a historical one. It's Psalm number 60. It is also used, parts of it, in Psalm 108, so just be aware of that. but it starts with this superscription that helps us date it. To the choir master, according to the Shushan Edut, a miktam of David. So all of that is just helping the choir master know the style of music, the type of instrumentation, things like that. For instruction. Now that's interesting. I think that's the first time we've seen that as a note on one of these psalms. But then comes the historical tie-in. When he strove with Aram Naharaim and with Aram Zobah. So that was part of the military operation when David pushed north up toward that bend in the Euphrates River. But that's not the only thing. And when Joab, on his return, struck down 12,000 of Edom in the Valley of Salt. Now, in our historic documentation, 1 Chronicles, we are told that it was Abishai who was doing this military operation. Now we find out that Joab was there as well. And so this is a song that David composed after that great military expansion. Some of it was just possessing areas that had not yet been taken by the Israelis as part of the Promised Land, but the Edom part was actually a reprisal for apparently an attack. And that seems to come out in the text here. Here we go. Verse 1. And remember, we feel Psalms. We let the emotion flow. O God, you have rejected us, broken our defenses. You have been angry. Oh, restore us. So right off the bat, we understand that David feels that God has allowed the Edomites to come in and attack him, to attack the Israeli people, and he's surprised by it. He thinks maybe it's because God is angry with the Israelis. You have made the land to quake. You have torn it open. Repair its breaches, for it totters. You have made your people see hard things. You have given us wine to drink that makes us stagger. So again, you feel here this understanding that they are caught off guard. They are shocked about something happening that they couldn't believe would ever happen. Verse 4, you have set up a banner for those who fear you, that they may flee to it from the bow, Selah. Now, Selah, I hope you remember, as I keep repeating it, seems to be a musical notation to basically bring up the music here, just kind of play a musical interlude, and let people think about what they've already heard. Kind of chew on it, to meditate. The Hebrew idea of meditation is to chew on something, to think about it. And so Selah seems to be a musical designation to do that right now. So what are they thinking about? Well, they're thinking about they can't believe that something's happened to them where God has allowed an invading force, apparently, a military force, to defeat them or at least do damage to them. And so David says, God, you've set up a banner that we can run to as those that fear you, to get away from this attack. Verse 5, that your beloved ones may be delivered. Give salvation by your right hand and answer us. So, God, please help us out here. You love us. Save us. Let us know what's going on. Verse 6, God has spoken in his holiness with exultation. I will divide up Shechem and portion out the vale of Sukkot. Now, that's a historical tie-in. Way back in history, when Jacob came back from Padan Aram, when he came back from north of that bend in the Euphrates River, which David may have actually been in that very vicinity recently when he's writing this. When Jacob came back to the Promised Land, he set up a cattle ranch at Sukkot. In fact, that's why he named it that. Sukkot means corrals in this context, cowsheds. And so he set that up down in the valley of the Jordan. And then one day's travel west from there, up in the hill country of the Promised Land, he set up a sheep operation at Shechem. And so both those places now are part of the Promised Land. And so God has spoken in his holiness, and he has divided Shechem and Sukkot into the hands of the Israelis. Verse number 7, Gilead is mine. Manasseh is mine. Now, Gilead is on the east side of the Jordan. It's the hilly plateau country to the east of Sukkot. And it was part of the annexed territories in the time of Moses. And so God says through David, Gilead belongs to God, and therefore it belongs to the Israelis. Manasseh was also one of the tribes besides Gad and Reuben that asked for property on that east side of the Jordan River, and they were given it. And Manasseh's territory was to the north of Gilead and also east of the Sea of Galilee. And so all that belongs to the Israelis because God gave it to them as his possession. Ephraim is my helmet. Now, Ephraim is west of the Jordan River. It's this big chunk of the Promised Land, and so it is part of God's armor. Judah is my scepter. So Judah is to the south in the Promised Land, but it is also the place that the Davidic dynasty is coming out of. And so a scepter is a ruling rod. And so all of that's tied in into David's song here. Moab is my wash basin, because David's just recently taken control of the Moabites. Upon Edom I've cast my shoe. That's another sign of ownership, of control. So David's just recently taken Edom. Over Philistia I shout in triumph, because it's underneath David's control. Who will bring me to the fortified city? Who will lead me to Edom? So this is the reference to the idea that Edom seems to have attacked Israel and briefly been successful in that. And David gets out his instrument and starts prophetically singing about that and wanting to know what God's going to do about that. And well, guess what? They win a victory. And Edom becomes part of the Israeli United Kingdom. The Edomites still live in their inherited territory, but David is their king, and therefore God is their king. Have you not rejected us, O God? You do not go forth, O God, with our armies. O grant us help against the foe, for vain is the salvation of man. So this, again, is part of that exasperation that at first it seems as if God is not on their side, that God lets this thing happen. And so they're pleading with God to give them victory because he is the true king. And of course, he does that, which is why in the historical things that we just read, all of these territories come under David's control because they're under God's control. And Edom is definitely one of those. With God we shall do valiantly. It is he who will tread down our foes. So it's not us. We're just human beings, David sings. We're the one, we can't save. It's God that has to make the difference. And so some good faith being promoted here. Let's go ahead and just read the small portion from Psalm 108 that comes from this same passage. That's Psalm 108, starting at verse 6. I just want you to see. That your beloved ones may be delivered, give salvation by your right hand and answer me. God has promised in his holiness, with exultation I will divide up Shechem and portion out the valley of Sukkot. Gilead is mine, Manasseh is mine, Ephraim's my helmet, Judah my scepter, Moab my washbasin. Upon Edom I'll cast my shoe, over Philistia I shout with triumph. Who will bring me into the fortified city? Who will lead me to Edom? Have you not rejected us, O God? You don't go out with us, O God, with our armies? Grant us help against the foe, for vain is the salvation of man. With God we shall do valiantly. It's he who will tread down our foes. So you can see maybe just a few little tweaks here and there in the vocabulary or the verbiage. But David reuses a portion of one psalm when he writes another psalm. And that happens from time to time. Now, speaking of psalms, for the next several sessions, we are going to camp out in the psalms of David that are not specifically dated. And so we've not been able to plug them into the story anywhere. And so we're going to go our way through them and just feel them. As I said, maybe teach a little bit of some of the things that are need a little bit of an explanation. And then after we get done with that, we'll bring in a few anonymous psalms that are similar to psalms written by David.